After growing up in Western Victoria, Ben Yole is happy to call Tasmania home. Yole has been the state's leading trainer for the past four seasons, and what a record-breaking run it has been. In the 2015-2016 season, he became the first Tasmanian trainer in 20 years to register a century of wins. Yole broke the Tasmanian record for the most number of season wins in the 2016-2017 season when he prepared 124 wins, a tally he equaled in the 2017-2018 season. But Yole smashed that total last season with 182 wins, a record for both equine codes in Tasmania. Yole has a big lead in this season's premiership, and his winning run doesn't appear to be slowing down anytime soon. I spoke to Ben about his career so far in the industry, plus we talked about the day-to-day operation of his large stable at Sidmouth in Tasmania's north. Ben Yole, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Duncan.
Let's have a look back at your career in harness racing, and it started back in Western Victoria. Hamilton's where you grew up. But what sort of age was you when you started to get an interest in harness racing?
Oh, look, I would say probably 7 or 8 years old. Fond memories of going out to Jimmy Barker's when I was young, which was only a bike ride from the stables to Mum and Dad's house, so we used to go out there every weekend. Early memories of pony races, and I do remember I was allowed to start driving big horses track work when I was 10, so it was obviously a bit before that I was out there, so yeah.
It would have been pretty good to work off. My time in Victoria, a lot of people in the Western District spoke highly of Jim Barker.
Oh, look, he still is an absolute legend of the sport. One of the nicest blokes you'll ever meet. Rarely did you ever hear him go off or give anyone a spray or even speak a bad word about anybody. He's just so easy going, such a nice fella. So it was sensational to grow up around him.
Yeah. Going through school, was harness racing all that you wanted to do, or did you have any other career aspects you was keen to look at?
Yeah, look, I was buggered from the start. Grade 6, wasn't interested. My actual teacher in grade 6, the only way he'd get me to learn anything at all was he gave me the paper to read every lunchtime in silent reading. I had to read the form guide and do my selections for the day. And then correct my selections from the day before whether I won or lost any money. So it was pretty funny actually when you think about how he had me doing maths and reading every at the same time without me realising what I was doing.
When you left school, I think you headed off to the Kevin Brough stable, and again someone pretty good out in that district to learn off.
Yeah, look, I went work experience. I actually ran Kevin Adam Brough up when I was in grade 10 and went out there for work experience for a week, and that was the end of it. I never went back to school, and I think I just finished grade 10 and got down there to work full time. So I just loved being around them. I loved being around Adam. Adam was just a teacher. He just teach you everything, driving, training. His 1%ers were just amazing what the bike would do after lunch and that.
Yeah, pretty good farrier too, wasn't he?
Oh, terrific, mate. Him and Kevin shot all their own. We used to work 40 there, and they do all their own shoeing and everything. There's nothing they couldn't do.
Yeah. So, naturally, you would have got your trial licence when you was 15 and progressed on to the races. Do you remember your first race drive?
Yeah, I remember my first race drive. I'm pretty sure it was at Sonata. I don't remember much about it. Didn't do much good, and was pretty nervous, but we got through that one.
Yeah, what about the first winner?
It was a funny story too. Actually, I wasn't actually working for Brough at that time. I was working with Jimmy and Rodney, and I had a horse going all right, but it just couldn't win. And I pulled its blood. I said to Jimmy, I said, I can't get this horse going. He's just not winning. He's just not going any good. And Jimmy said, I'll pull his blood, mate, and see what you think. And I took his blood test, and his blood come back, and Jimmy said, mate, you won't get a better blood than that. How about you have a look at the way you're driving him? And he said, stop being out so wide, and so next start, I punched the fence and won the race. So there wasn't much wrong with the way the horse was going. It was more the driver.
Let's fast track to the summer of 2006. Your father, Wayne, decided to send you to Tasmania and with a horse called Moziev. I think he contested a Bernie Cup, may have ran third in that. That was just your first sort of look at Tasmanian harness racing, and you sort of made a few friends there for the future.
Yeah, look, Bruffy cut back by then. Adam went away working with family, and Bruffy cut right back, and I sort of had a crack on my own, and a couple of Bruffy's owners, Bruffy gave them to me, they come with me, and got a few of my own together, and had a lot of young horses, and got them all to the races in about a six-month period, and not one of them were any good at all. They were absolutely hopeless, so we just couldn't kick a goal, and ended up claiming Moisiev with about 4,000. He wasn't doing much, and Tony Fulcino and a few mates are over in Tasmania and said, come for the vineyard and just come for a couple of weeks and stay and race a couple and have a bit of fun. And we sort of didn't look back much after that.
Not long after, your father Wayne was able to secure a job with Mick Maxfield, of which both you and Mark were an integral part of that team. Would have been a nice period to learn a little bit more and deal with some quality livestock. I don't think Mick Maxfield actually has a bad horse in work.
No, that was a really good experience. I worked for Mick for about 6 months. Actually got to take the Jesse Kempra to Melbourne for the Vic Friendly Run Second on my pocket watching the heat. So it was all a good experience. It was fantastic, and Mick was good to us and helped us survive at the early stages of Tasmania.
So after that 6 months, the old family decided to branch out on their own in Tasmania. But a year or so later, you decided to head back across Bass Strait, and the training sort of become a bit more of a hobby. I think you was involved in a furniture shop over there, and it wasn't that long before you decided to come back. Talk us a little bit through that period.
Yeah, we went out on our own, and we had sort of 15, 20 horses, and done that for a bit. Sort of couldn't afford our own property and that, so we sort of getting around everywhere and couldn't get a decent horse. Won a few races, but just wasn't kicking a lot of goals, and decided to go have a crack back in Victoria. Dad had a big furniture shop over there, so went over there and set up back with the furniture shop. Lasted a while doing that, made good money out of it, and had the horses as a hobby, but they were just they were destined to get back full time with the horses if we could.
Well, you arrived back in Tasmania in early 2010. It's hard to think with the numbers you train now. You didn't actually appear on the top 10 trainers premiership until the 2012-2013 season with 21 wins. But when you first came back for what is now your last sort of stint here in Tassie, the racing was just a hobby for a little while, wasn't it?
Yeah, I just come back with six horses. Went to Clayton Miller's at their direction and rented a place close by him, and just come back. Catherine had a full-time job and just sort of didn't know what I wanted to do in life, but just striving to get our own property was the hard part. So done the horse as a hobby and got a full-time job. So that was sort of the turning point for us.
The first big season was 2015-2016. Then you became the first Tasmanian trainer in 20 years to train a century of wins. And you also broke a record for the most number of starters in that season. But to reach 100 winners must have been a bit of a personal achievement.
Yeah, look, it was fantastic. Well, then we sort of bought our own property, set up everything how we wanted it, and just got some really good clients along the way, and things started to roll for us, and had some nice owners, nice enough horses, just bread and butter horses the whole way through. And it's been good. We've sort of been out of door full time now, and that's what we enjoy doing.
Yeah. Last season, 182 winners in Tasmania. That's the number that we probably will never see broken again unless you can manage to do it in the next season or two. That was just a stellar year, and I don't think you mind me saying this, but you probably have had more a focus on the bread and butter horses throughout this period.
Yeah, look, it was fantastic. We we don't have superstar horses, but we just turn over bread and butter horses. And we buy and sell a lot of horses, come through, and we sort of win a few races with them and move on, and that's sort of what we've been doing.
Well, currently racing in Tasmania is paused, as we all know. 103 winners to your credit so far this season. Let's just have a look at your Sidmouth property. Talk us through the facilities you've got there. You've got the track, you've got a bush jog track, I believe, and a beach not too far away.
Yeah, look, it's a lovely little setup for what we wanted. It's 50 acres. And we own it. That's the most important thing. We're sort of sick of paying rent everywhere, and we own it. We bought a. We put a track in. But it was nothing when we got it. It was a dairy farm, so we put a track in. Nice big paddocks. We don't have stables, and we rented a place just down the road that's got a big bush track through it. So we've been able to get that going in the last sort of 2 years. We've got a really good swimming facility, and we've got the beach not far away. So it sort of works. Catered to every horse that we need it for.
On average, how many horses do you like to keep in work at one period?
Oh, look, through the busy summertime, we have about 70, 75. And through wintertime, last year, we sort of experimented with Tim, went away to Melbourne with a team of horses, and that worked well. So we keep about 50 on the books through winter.
Yep. As I said, they are big numbers for Tasmanian standard, but I suppose... when you race them on a regular basis and you're getting these horses virtually race fit from the mainland, I guess during the week you won't have to do a lot with them because they're sort of race fit from day dot.
Yeah, look, the thing we probably have learned over the last 3 years is lesser is better, especially when we race like we do. So we've cut our times down in our track work and we just do everything now a lot steadier, a lot slower, which seems to a lot of horses seem to appreciate that. Send them through the bush. The bush is a very easy day for them, but they sort of appreciate getting off the racetrack. So, we don't do a lot during the week. We just jog and lead a few, gallop a few, and put a few through the bush.
One question I get asked a lot, Ben, is race day. You have large numbers and how you get them all there and things like that. So let's be hypothetical and say there's a meeting at Launceston on a Sunday starting at 5 o'clock. You've got 30 horses in, let's say. What time of the day do you start getting those horses ready to go to the races? Because anyone that's took one knows that it's a bit of a timely task.
Yeah, look, we have plenty of staff. That's sort of, the more staff can cut down their time a bit, obviously. So at lunchtime, we start potting along, getting things ready and get into the track about 2:30, 3 o'clock, so a good couple of hours before the first, and they all have their own gear bags and everything, so it's pretty set up. We've got things very organised, everyone knows their role.
Yeah, you like to get them geared up nice and early. Virtually, when I walk on track, every horse you've got in is geared up, and even their order in stables is pretty well organised as well.
Yeah, look, we just learnt little tricks along the way, which having such big numbers, and we just keep them all in their race order and number order and get them all geared up nice and early. So we have a set of harness for everyone. They all get their gear on obviously start racing through.
Let's talk about some of the more high-profile members of your team. We'll start with your brother, Mark. He's predominantly the stable driver, and you must be rapt to see where he's been able to start from and get right through to be one of the leading drivers in this state.
Yeah, look, he's done a really good job. He, in my book, there's not many better than him when his head's in the game. He's had his issues in the past, and we work well together when both our heads are in the game. And horses run for him. He's aggressive. He can judge pace, and he knows how I like to drive them. So. Yeah, he does a good job, mate.
One person that sort of gets shadowed away because their name's not in the race book is Tim. He's probably one of the hardest workers out of the three of you, without being too disrespectful. He's the backbone of the stable, I suppose we could say.
Yeah, look, Tim's everything. Without Tim, we wouldn't have the stables as big as what they are and as busy as what they are. I was wrapped last year. He went away to Melbourne. He got 20 winners or so, and he's just over the moon, so... it was good that he could go and do that himself. He shoes horses, he works them, he drives them. Any job you want done, he'll do. So and one of the hardest workers you'll ever come across.
Yeah. As you said, you've got a few staff there that help your race day as well, but you're not afraid to use a few concession claims, and you know, like anyone young in the game, they're eager to get in and have a go, and also are there to give you a few hand. A few recent drivers I can think of coming through your stable. You've had Troy McDonald, Connor Crook, Sam Gangel, Olivia Wiedenbach, Kim Grant, and I know I've missed plenty more. But you're not afraid to give the juniors a go.
No, look, I think it works two ways. I think the claim really helps some of our bread and butter horses get a draw, and especially with the new rating system, probably helps them even more now. So we have to be respectful there and try and use our services when we can to give our horses our best chance. And then also, I think they respect us that it's very hard to get a gig out there and get a drive, especially when a lot of trainer drivers do their own thing and drive themselves. So it gives them a big opportunity. They might not be always driving the best horse in the race, but at least they've got a drive. So a lot of them appreciate the opportunity to drive and give us a hand. They know how busy we are. It's not just juniors. Senior drivers jump in and give us a hand too. So they know how busy race day is. I think they appreciate it.
You've touched on the satellite stable before, and as I mentioned, as we record this, Tassie Racing is on hold for the time being. But is that something on the cards come winter again?
Oh, look, we had it penciled in, and we're certainly going back end of July. So with all this stuff up in the air, who knows what may happen. If we're allowed to go back, we probably will. At this stage, sort of, I don't think Victoria's accepting interstate trainers, so at this stage, it's not on the cards, but if everything can settle down by the end of July, we'll be back there, because we a couple of things. I think, one, it showed Victoria that, you know, we do not a bad job. We're winning with horses that couldn't win there before, so we got a bit of respect out of that. We also found a few new clients through it, and it gave our owners another opportunity to win races when it's a bit quieter here.
Yeah. As we touched on, you do have large numbers. Have you considered moving back to Victoria full time, just so you can not have so many horses racing against each other every week?
No, but Tim might stay for longer if we can sort it out that we're allowed to. Tim may, if we can make sure we get our staff right in Tasmania, Tim may sort of stay a bit longer. We might have a bit more of a satellite stable over there, because it did sort of work well, and we're able to place a few horses a bit better.
I touched on earlier, you sort of seem to focus on bread and butter horses, but we've seen a bit of a change in recent weeks. But if we go back to the last two yearling sales, you've been an active buyer of the Carrick sale. Of course, Written in Silk was a two-year-old that won on debut recently. That seems to be a new way you're sort of shifting your business, and probably rightly so, because there's a lot of money in that juvenile racing here in Tasmania.
Yeah, look, I've been lucky. I've been able to talk a couple of really good clients into going that way. I'd like to talk a few more if I can, because one, there's a couple of things to it. I think, one, the juvenile money's so huge in Tasmania, it's sensational. The bonuses are great, especially if you can buy Tas bred. And then it'll give you resources for later on in the future, hopefully if they're good enough to go through the classes. So it's sort of works as a double-edged sword, and I think I can understand there's a lot of clients don't want to go that way because they want something racing straight away and a return, but it's been great. Last year I had a few clients buy them. We were lucky to get Written in Silk out of it so far, and a couple others showed plenty of promise. And this year we've had another crack and bought four or five yearlings, which probably Written in Silk owners went again, and a few other existing clients who've got racehorses, so they could sort of see both sides of it. So I'm certainly trying to push a few more clients into buying young ones. And I've got another owner who's breeding a couple and going to really good stallions out of good mares that we had. So that that's all good for the future, hopefully.
Tasmanians don't breed a lot number-wise, but the quality's certainly there.
Yeah, certainly. We had a couple of really, really nice mares, and you know, they won 10 or 12 races and they're really well bred. So one of our owners went to Captain Treacherous, and a few others went to a few good stallions. So they're putting in, and hopefully one of their mares might be a good mare.
Ben, as we get towards the end of this podcast, what has been the biggest race you've won, and what's the race you'd most like to win?
Oh, look, the Lonnie Cup was a big thrill. Burnie Cup, just a few country sort of cups like that. I haven't really been involved in the big juvenile races, but I think the ultimate be obviously the Inter Dominion or something like that. But I think just a feature two-year-old race would be really, really nice to win, and that's sort of what we're planning on doing, hopefully.
Yeah. Who's been the best horse you've put a bridle on?
Since I've trained, probably Noel Patchy Me. He's been a sensational story for the stable, still owned by Stable Client. So he's done a terrific job and still going strong. I reckon he'd be the best horse.
And what about a favourite? You know, not relatively the best horse, but the horse that, you know, just you like dealing with and runs the honest race each week. Who's probably been the favourite horse?
Given a name, was probably my most favourite horse I've ever trained. He was just an old claimer that won a lot of races for us. I think he might have won 20 or 25 races. He's still got a place at home now. He lives up in the paddock looking after the young ones, and he's the boss of them. He sorts them out. And it's currently my favourite horse, currently be Perfect Mac. He's just a little gem, and he's named after my son. My son's got the stable name, and he won the Burnie Cup, and it was a very proud day for the little fella.
Yeah, you reckon Hudson will follow in Dad's footsteps?
Oh, we can't stop him at the moment. So, yeah, he wasn't interested at all, but the last 6 months now he's gone overboard, so he's got everything under control.
Yeah, you see him in your colours every week at the races. Probably a little bit too early to say if Nixon will follow in, but given the bloodlines, wouldn't be a surprise, would it?
Oh, it's getting thrown at their face a fair bit when there's 75, 80 horses getting worked around them. And, Hudson can nearly tell you most horses' race names and stable names, and he's out most morning telling the staff what to do. So he thinks he's foreman already, I think.
He might do better than some of the staff naming them now.
Very true.
Well, Ben, I've really appreciated looking back at your career in harness racing today. All the very best with the future. Hopefully the COVID-19 pandemic can sort itself out quickly, and I wish you the best of luck when we get back racing. Thanks again.
Yeah, let's hope we can go shortly, Duncan. Thanks, mate.